This week's Pseudopod is brought to you by Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/pseudopod to claim your free audiobook. Pseudopod, episode 120, December 12th, 2008. This week's story, Iowa Highway by Brendan Detzner. Hi, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair, and this week's story comes to us from Brendan Detzner. Brendan's work has appeared in Gothic.net, Chiaroscuro, the new edition of the Dead Things anthology available from TwilightTales.com, and the splendidly titled Edge of Proper Iniquity. Your narrator this week is the zombie astronaut himself, Mr. Ralph Walters. So, don't make eye contact, don't look up, don't accept help, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Iowa Highway by Brendan Detzner. The first thing they did when they took a trip like this was pick new names. This time they were Michael and Jennifer. The house was empty when they got there. It was beautiful, the summer home of very wealthy people. The interior was an open shell, rugs on a stone-paneled floor with a kitchen in back and an open-sided spiral staircase that led up to a balcony bedroom and another set of stairs in back that led to a kitchen. The house was surrounded by grass, which was surrounded by woods, which were surrounded by a wooden fence. They took their clothes off as soon as they got inside. Jennifer threw hers in the corner. Michael left a trail, starting with his shirt at the front door and ending with his underwear in the kitchen. "Jesus, I'm hungry." He stopped suddenly and looked at her sheepishly, like a dog that knows it's done something wrong. "No, I didn't mean..." Jennifer shook her head. "I know you didn't. Don't worry." She hoisted herself up onto the counter, put her hand on his shoulder, and tilted her head to the side. He spit on her neck. His saliva was bright green. It hissed like oil in a frying pan, and a second later there was a swollen red mark on her neck. He nibbled on it gently, and her skin tore and split like tissue paper. She closed her eyes as he pressed his mouth against the wound. They stayed at the house for about 2 weeks. Jim had just passed the exit that would have led him home when the rain finally and definitively froze into hail. The sound of the ice hitting the roof of his truck got louder and harder, as though each individual stone was pissed off at him personally. He could barely see the road. Every story he had ever heard about someone getting killed in a wreck started with weather like this. He cursed and regretted it immediately, taking the Lord's name in vain. He thought about his wife. He'd taken the new job to be home with her more often. If he still owned his own truck, there's no way in hell he'd still be driving tonight. He caught himself looking down at the speedometer as the exit got further behind him. If he didn't think of something else to think about, he was going to go crazy. Well, there was Joe, and there was Petey. Really, that was it, as far as people he had any regular contact with lately. His last conversation with Petey had gone so badly he automatically found himself leaning toward Joe, even though he hadn't even seen him in a couple of weeks. The three things that Joe talked about almost exclusively were politics, gambling, and sex, and he would usually touch on all three over the course of a conversation. Jim tried to remember where he'd started the last time they spoke.
"She's gonna be on my dick like a dog on a pork chop."
Yeah, there it was. They were sitting in an odd corner of a truck stop south of the Quad Cities. The stools they were using were meant to go with a video game, a horse racing simulator Jim never made any effort to understand, and that he'd never seen anyone actually playing. It had become their regular spot to stop and talk whenever they ran into each other.
"You mean she's gonna rip it off with her teeth?" Jim said.
Joe laughed a little longer than was strictly normal and kicked the steel pipe holding up the table. Jim couldn't remember who Joe'd been talking about that particular night. Probably some waitress.
"Still, though, the time's coming. It's gonna fucking happen. It just is. Fucking destiny, my good friend."
"I'm sure it is, Joe."
"You don't believe me?"
"I believe everything you say, Joe. Always do."
Jim shifted in his seat as a giant mass passed through his peripheral vision, an obese man wearing a blue baseball cap, walking slowly from the convenience store on one side of the compound to a collection of restaurants on the other. Joe waved.
"Hey, Pete."
The giant turned his head slightly in their direction, lifted a hand to acknowledge them, and kept walking. Joe didn't say anything until the big man entered the restaurant and then left their sight. It was probably the longest Jim had ever heard him shut up.
Now there's a fucked up guy.
When they were done, Michael wiped off the counter with a washcloth and then went upstairs to find some new clothes. Jennifer found something she liked right away, a blue sundress. It took Michael longer. He settled on a pair of khaki pants and a green turtleneck. He also found a pair of glasses with round lenses. They made his vision blurry, so he broke the lenses and just wore the frames. I wonder who he is. He doesn't seem to own any suits. Maybe he's a teacher. He could still cast a reflection in the bathroom mirror when all the lights were on and he stood in just the right place. He turned to the side and admired his profile.
That'd be a fun job, don't you think?
Jennifer was looking at the pictures on the dresser, picking them up and putting them back down one at a time.
Maybe he just doesn't like to wear suits when he's on vacation.
He left the bathroom.
You're probably right.
He saw her lingering on one of the pictures, a 7-year-old playing soccer with a cousin or a younger brother. She was entranced, smiling with sad eyes. She noticed him watching and blushed.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
He looked away from her.
It's all right. Please don't worry.
He left the bedroom and went back downstairs. She followed a minute later. It was 3 o'clock in the morning.
Do you want to go ahead and start now?
Michael shook his head. It's too late. It'd be suspicious. We should wait for tomorrow night. We can take a look at the property now. The sun won't rise for another couple of hours. Jennifer looked out the window above the sink.
They say there's going to be a blizzard tomorrow night.
They're wrong, Michael said.
I can hear it. It's not going to snow until later.
Michael was right. There wasn't a cloud in the sky the following evening. Jim remembered. Joe had been talking.
I mean, he's a decent guy, but he was kind of messed up in the head before, and he's really fucked now. He was in an accident, some people got killed, a whole family. Probably not his fault, but some fucking lawyer spewed a whole lot of shit, and Petey doesn't know any better than to believe him. Some guy sounds smart.
He saw Petey again about a day later at the same truck stop. It was freezing cold outside, and Petey was walking back and forth between the restrooms and the main entrance. Jim watched him haul his feet across the floor, one at a time, over and over again. Every so often he'd stop and sit down at the bench, and after a moment he would somehow find the strength to get back up and retrace his route a few more times. A red streak darted across Jim's right rearview mirror. A red sports car went flying past. Jim flinched. The car moved back into the left lane and slid more than halfway onto the shoulder before it got back on the road. Jim felt his heartbeat smack the inside of his skull like a bass drum. That's it, he decided. I'm finishing the run and getting home in one piece. No more thinking about anything. Not Joe the asshole, not Petey the headcase, nobody. He imagined saying the words, Petey the headcase, to his wife, and was ashamed of himself. He turned up the radio and looked for a new station. They climbed up the side of the house together. From the roof they could see the rose flowing along the highway like water. Michael watched the cars, then turned and watched Jennifer. She was so beautiful. This was one of his favorite things, to be up here with her like this.
How many more before we can get out of here?
She said. Michael's heart fell through his chest.
I was thinking 3, he said.
Jennifer didn't quite sigh.
All right, I think I can do that.
Michael looked back at the highway.
All right.
They stayed there, perched on the roof for about 2 hours, until the traffic thinned out. They saw a truck roll by. There was nothing behind it or in front of it for more than 2 miles. They glanced at each other, looked back down, and leapt into the air. Jim was thinking about Petey again within an hour. They saw each other again a few days after Joe had pointed Petey out. They were both standing by the window, watching the wind push the leaves back and forth across the parking lot. Neither were sure how long the other had been there. When they finally did notice each other, there was a moment of awkward silence.
Hi, I'm Jim,
Jim finally said. Petey didn't say anything for a long moment. Jim wondered if he was making a fool of himself.
I'm Petey, he finally responded. Well, all right, Jim said, still not sure where he stood. Nice to meet you. You know Joe, right?
Petey paused again before he spoke, and Jim realized that it wasn't anything personal. This was just how he talked.
Yeah.
He looked out the window again.
Joe's an asshole.
It took a second for it to sink in, then Jim laughed out loud, a deep belly laugh that embarrassed him as soon as he got it under control.
Well, I guess that's about right. Sure does like to talk, though.
Yeah,
Petey said. They only talked for a little while longer before they had to get going, but the next time they saw each other, they had a little more time to spare. Michael saw the truck on the side of the road, and a man in flannel standing next to it, kicking the right front tire and swearing up a blue streak. In the darkness, he could see the truck driver long before the driver could see him. And even when he was in sight, it took the driver a long time to notice him.
Do you have a problem? Michael said.
He stopped kicking the tire.
I do. My truck just died and won't start up again, and my radio is dead and my cell phone isn't working.
He looked up at Michael, suddenly suspicious.
Mind if I ask what you're doing out here at midnight?
Michael licked his lips and looked him in the eye.
Relax.
The driver's posture changed instantly. His shoulders dropped and his hands fell limp at his sides. It doesn't look like you're going to be able to get back on the road tonight. My home isn't far from here. You can spend the night there and call a mechanic in the morning. The driver looked at his truck, then back at Michael.
Sounds good.
Michael turned around and started walking back toward the house.
What's your name again?
Joe,
the driver said. About a half an hour later, they approached the front gate and followed the driveway to the porch. The porch lights came on as they got closer, revealing a heavy oak front door, painted a dark wine red. Jennifer opened the door from inside the house.
We have a guest.
She looked Joe over.
Do you want something to eat?
She asked. Joe nodded his head and stumbled into the house. The table had been set with the dark gray stoneware dishes they'd found in the kitchen cabinets. There was a giant wooden serving bowl filled with pasta and broiled tomatoes and a small plate with a neat pile of grated Parmesan cheese on top of it. Joe sat down and started eating. Every few minutes, Jennifer would ask him a question about his job or what his interests were, but he was never able to give a coherent answer. Eventually, Michael told him he was done eating and that he should go downstairs. It was a tiny bedroom, just enough to contain a king-size bed and a nightstand. Jim went inside, closed the door behind him, collapsed onto the bed, and wondered where he was and what he was doing. Then he fell asleep. He woke up a while later with a clear head. Not much time had passed. It was still dark outside. He blinked to jump back. Jennifer was perched on the corner of the bed. He'd somehow failed to notice she was there.
Hello,
she said. Joe was very confused.
It was nice talking to you at dinner.
She paused on the odd chance that he might have something to say and started up again when he just kept staring.
We don't get much company, and it's not often I get to talk to someone other than my husband. There was something else I didn't have a chance to mention, something I was hoping you could help me with.
Again she hesitated, and again, nothing.
I want a child.
Joe's jaw dropped, very slightly. He woke up again a few hours later, not much better rested. The sun was starting to rise outside. An orange light shone on the door of the bedroom through the window. For a second he was certain that he'd been having a dream, but he could feel Jennifer's naked body pressing against his, her hands resting on his stomach. He wondered how he was going to tell this story and not sound like a complete liar. It was easier when you just made stuff up. He closed his eyes and appreciated the novelty of her body heat. He moved his arm and felt something warm and wet on the side of his body. He freed his hand from the covers and held it up to the light creeping through the window. It was covered with blood. He climbed out of the bed and saw a long red smear starting with a tear in his skin just below his ribs and continuing down to his knees. The door opened and Michael stepped into the room. He was completely naked except for his glasses, and there was not yet enough light to hide the fact that his green eyes were glowing gently in the dark.
You must be pleased with yourself,
he whispered, sneering. He said it again, shifting the emphasis to the last three syllables. Jim and Petey ended up talking pretty regularly. They could not be described as good friends, and Jim had no desire to ever meet Petey outside of a bar or a truck stop, but they'd become familiar with each other. Jim never talked to Petey about his faith, both because the subject never came up, because Jim was not comfortable talking to people about God outside of church. It wasn't a problem Leanne had, and he was grateful for that. If he hadn't been lucky enough to be one of the hundreds of people she'd gotten in the face of over the years, he knew he'd never would have met her. He remembered. They were walking through woods near their house on a Sunday afternoon, talking about how they'd met, what their lives had been like before, and how things were going to be different now that they were married. Jim had been able to take 2 weeks off work right before the wedding, but he'd had to stay on the road for a month afterward, and he'd harbored a fear that once she saw how often he wouldn't be around, she'd have second thoughts about being with him. But it hadn't taken long to realize it wasn't going to be a problem for her. Leanne missed him when he was away, but she still had friends and church and long walks and nieces and nephews in town to keep her busy. She was all right. He was the problem. He'd had the job so long he could barely remember doing anything else, and he'd learned how to let the miles go by. But now every minute he was on the road was a minute he couldn't spend with her, and it was driving him crazy. He felt weak and stupid telling her this. The leaves had turned brown and orange and red, matching Leanne's hair, and they'd held hands like teenagers.
"It sounds like you don't like doing your job that much."
She said it with a sly smile on her face. She'd been insisting that he wasn't satisfied with what he was doing for as long as they'd known each other, and he'd always denied it up and down. Jim smiled back, not quite blushing. "There's nothing wrong with it. It just doesn't feel like I'm doing much anymore."
"Maybe you should find more things to do. Maybe there's somebody you can help out."
He denied the possibility repeatedly for 5 minutes. Then, finally, and only to exclude him from consideration, he mentioned Petey.
"Well, there you go,"
Leanne said. He saw Petey 2 weeks later, looking out the same window where they'd first spoke. It was late in the afternoon, and the clouds darkened the sky even though the sun hadn't set yet. Jim said hello, and Petey nodded his head in acknowledgement. They talked about the weather for a little while.
"Look," Jim finally said, "I was hoping I could talk to you about something. Do you go to church?"
There was a long pause. Jim was used to that, but this one went on even longer than usual. Toward the end, he found himself growing uncomfortable.
"Why do you ask?"
Petey said, with more thought behind his words than usual. Jim felt a sharp twist in the pit of his stomach, but pushed past it.
"I heard about your accident. Something like that can mess a man up."
Jim glanced away from the window, and he saw that Petey was staring right at him.
"I don't believe in that shit,"
Petey said. He turned around and walked away. It wasn't until he was gone that Jim realized the conversation was over. Petey was driving. It was a beautiful, clear night. It was late, and the road was empty. He wasn't listening to the radio. He hadn't done that in months, at first because he was afraid of getting distracted, and later because the sound of people's voices started bothering him. 2.5 hours went by. The engine died. The lights on the dashboard went out a second later. For a few seconds, he felt like a blind man. He opened the door to the cab, took a look at his rearview mirror to make sure there weren't any other cars coming, and climbed down. He turned around and saw a man with green eyes standing on the side of the road. Somehow he'd failed to see him in the mirror.
"I see you're having some engine trouble."
There was a knock on the door. Jennifer put her clothes back on and answered it. Michael was there. He'd brought someone with him, a very large man in a winter coat. The first thing she did was look at his face. Different people responded to her husband's control in different ways. Some of them sleepwalked silently. Others would act drunk and say things they usually wouldn't.
"His name's Petey,"
Michael said, and pushed him through the door. "Go to the table and eat what's put in front of you." Dinner was already served, a plate of cold pasta drowned in sauce. Petey started eating.
"Do you like your job, Petey?"
Jennifer asked him.
"No," he said, in an even voice.
"Then why do you do it?"
He didn't answer.
"Because he can't do anything else. That's why they all do whatever they're doing."
Michael was sitting at the table, hunched over, staring idly at the countertop.
"No, I don't have to,"
Petey answered quickly, leaving no space in between Michael's words and his response, but without changing his tone of voice. He put the silverware down on the table and stared off into space.
"I'd have to get a gun. That's the only sure way. Even with pills, you can make a mistake and it doesn't work out right. I could get a gun at a pawn shop. I don't think they cost that much.
He shook his head back and forth, looked down at his plate, and continued eating as though nothing had happened. When he was done eating, Michael led him away from the table and brought him to the basement bedroom. "Stay here," he said. "Sleep." He closed the door. Petey collapsed onto the bed. He was confused and very tired. He wanted to sleep, but he was scared to close his eyes. Something he'd said at the dinner table. He couldn't even remember what it was now. He needed to walk, Petey decided. He hadn't gotten any exercise all day. He could hear Mike and Jennifer arguing on the balcony as he came upstairs. Neither of them seemed to notice as he left the house. He saw something as he stepped off the driveway onto the grass, a pair of lines cutting across the field, barely visible in the darkness, like an old scar. He approached them, leaned over, and touched the dirt with his fingers. Somebody had driven a car across the field. The trail led toward the woods. As it approached the trees, it split into several shallower tracks, cutting the grass into a dirty mess. There were vehicles wedged between the tree trunks wherever they would fit. Petey heard a voice he recognized.
"Please, God, you gotta help me."
He found Joe naked and tied to a tree. His body was covered with blood and chemical burns, and there were corpses tied to the trees around him.
"What happened?" Petey whispered.
Joe laughed, emptying his lungs to do it, and told him everything. For a moment, he forgot where he was. He closed his eyes, and when he opened them, Petey was walking away.
"Wait!"
His head dropped, and his eyes closed again. And suddenly, just sitting there, driving a truck he'd spent countless hours driving, and remembering an afternoon he'd thought about many times already, Jim just fucking hated all of it. The truck, the snow falling around him, and the road, and the job, and his life. There was a flash in the sky up ahead, heat lightning, and before his eyes could recover, he saw a pair of black silhouettes flying through the air toward his truck, a man and a woman. The sky went dark again, and the silhouettes were gone. His engine went dead, and his dashboard lights faded out a few minutes later. He pulled the truck to the side of the road. The radio didn't work, neither did his cell phone. He wondered if he was going to get fired. He didn't allow himself to admit what he'd seen until a few minutes had passed. He leaned against his trailer and watched the snow fall, while he thought about it. Suddenly a smile appeared on his face, and the tension disappeared from his shoulders. He figured it out. He laughed at himself and how long it had taken him. A man with green eyes appeared on the other side of the road. Jim wasn't sure where he'd come from. Just looking at the man made Jim dizzy.
"I see you're having some engine trouble," the man said.
"Yeah," Jim answered, because it was the truth and because he didn't see any reason not to.
"It doesn't look like you're going to be able to get back on the road tonight. My home isn't far from here. You can spend the night and call a mechanic in the morning."
Jim thought about it for a second and shook his head. "No,
I'm sorry, but I can't. I'm just going to leave the truck here and walk to the nearest gas station so I can call my wife and have her pick me up."
The man with the green eyes seemed confused.
"It's a long way to walk in the cold. Wouldn't you rather come with me?"
Jim thought about it.
"No," he finally responded. "It's nice of you to offer, but I can't. God sent two angels to fuck with my engine."
He wouldn't usually have sworn, but he was feeling strangely uninhibited tonight.
"He wants me to quit my job so I can spend more time with my wife. I was worried about finding another job, but I'm pretty sure things will turn out okay. And I'm not too worried about the cold, either. Thanks anyway."
He turned away from the green-eyed man, took a step back in the direction of the last gas station he'd seen, and started walking. He thought about what he had said. It was a little embarrassing, but he meant every word. He'd seen angels. They were different than any pictures of angels he'd seen, but it wasn't as though he'd put much stock in those pictures anyway. His truck disappeared in the snow behind him. The lights of the gas station became visible. He wondered how Leanne would take being called at this hour. She'd probably be upset, he decided, but he was pretty sure she'd forgive him. Jennifer came downstairs a few minutes later. She saw Petey's boots up against the wall outside the bedroom. They were covered with mud and pine needles. She opened the door. Petey was pretending to sleep. She stepped inside and closed the door behind her.
"Open your eyes,"
she said, and Petey did.
You were outside.
Petey didn't admit it or deny it. He barely moved.
Why did you come back? You know what's going to happen, right?
It took a while for Petey to put the words together.
It doesn't sound so bad.
He looked up at the ceiling.
It's not like I have much to look forward to anyway.
For a moment he felt as though he had suddenly become transparent, and that she was watching something underneath him that he wasn't able to see himself. She pulled her dress up over her head and dropped it on the floor by the foot of the bed. She wasn't wearing anything underneath. Her body was lean and willowy, and seemed to hang from her shoulders like a curtain. She climbed onto the bed, let her weight settle on top of him, and kissed him on the lips. About an hour later, Michael came downstairs. When he opened the door, Petey was asleep in bed. Jennifer was sitting in a corner of the room with her arms wrapped around her knees. She looked up at him without fear.
Not this time, she said quietly. Just don't.
He was confused. He was actually angrier than before, but his face was quiet and his body was still. Fine, he eventually said. He reached for Petey's neck with both hands. I'll make it quick.
Just to the left of the world is a place we love to look at and pray we never actually make eye contact with. This is the world where immense prehistoric birds carry people away. The world where pyramid-shaped objects escorted by cargo helicopters give radiation burns to passers-by. This is the world where a figure that may, or may not, be Bigfoot walks forever across a creek bed, always just out of focus, always just out of reach. This is the world filled with the creatures that myths arm us against and that we never quite believed in. But we remember the myths. Just in case. It's a fun place to visit. After all, 10 years of The X-Files doesn't lie. In many ways, there's even something reassuring about the idea that we're not only not alone in the universe, we're not alone in the world. As long, that is, as we don't make eye contact. After all, we didn't get where we are now without knowing how to spot predators and avoid them. Just remember, the food chain may be longer than we think. I'm a big Batman fan, and there's never, to my mind, been a better Batman audio story than Nightfall. Adapting one of the best event stories the character has ever had, Nightfall follows what happens when Batman uncovers the Order of Azrael, a secret monastic society whose champion, Azrael, is conditioned to be the embodiment of vengeance. But the Order may not be as pure as even Azrael himself thinks, and Batman soon finds himself having to deal with them, a staged mass outbreak at Arkham, the chaos that ensues, and the mastermind behind it all. Classic, full-throttle, pulp radio action, it's one of the many superb projects masterminded by Dirk Maggs, one of the most interesting and prolific figures working in radio drama today, and it's available from Audible.com. Batman, action, a vast conspiracy, and an immensely sarcastic Alfred. What's not to like? Speaking of like, if you like this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. Your money goes exclusively to paying our authors, so please believe me when I say you will make someone's day by doing it. And how cool is that? Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod has extensive files.